Good evening, James McCanny here with my Science Hour for December 6, 2018. Many topics to talk about tonight. I'll be talking about George Bush Sr., president, one-time vice president, head of the CIA earlier, and then banking representative, although not openly, but representative of the European bankers, of the Federal Reserve and all things related. So I'll be talking about this. Certainly nothing you'll hear on the mainstream media news. Also, just a quick note about new president of Mexico, Andrés Manuel López, a possible change of venue for that poor, struggling, most populous of all Latin American countries. And Mexico historically has just been ravaged by, I'm not sure what you'd even call it, just plundered, raped, pillaged, and plundered in every way possible. And the people, literally the majority of the vast majority, it's a two-tier society, not three in the United States and most other countries. You have the rich, the poor, and some semblance of a middle class. Mexico has never had a middle class. In fact, even as I go around other foreign countries, you do see a semblance of a middle class, but Mexico has completely barren of middle class. So it's a few rich people with lots and lots of poor people. And so in the same way, well, if you go to Central American countries, the northern Central American countries, the same situation. But I saw the introduction speech of López, and he cut out all of the personal benefits of the president. He's taking only 40% of his salary. The rest of it is being donated back to the country to specific projects, etc. All of the helicopters, all of the pomp and circumstance, the 300 agencies that deal with doling out money to special interests, he's drying them up, putting them under the National Guard, which is interesting. And so basically he's just cutting the budget, cutting the gross, overly gross amount of fat out of the federal government. And as with other countries, now, just a little side note, he almost was elected a number of years ago, and the corrupt parties maintained, and this is actually happening more and more in Latin America, where the populist candidates who would represent the people are coming closer and closer to winning in various countries, and they have won in certain countries like Ecuador, recently maintained its presidential party that was there for nearly 12 years, and now that same party has maintained power, helping the people out, although still these are third world countries. They're desperate, to say the least, situations for a lot of people there. But there is a ray of hope for that country, which is just ridden with, for example, major problems, the drug cartels, which moved in from other Latin American countries, primarily Colombia, and then the drug cartels, which were already in Mexico. They're fighting over turf, ending up with just an absolutely bizarre, dangerous situation in that country, which depends, by the way, on tourism. The biggest income in Mexico is illegal aliens working in the United States, sending their money back to try and support their families in Mexico. So Mexico has a tremendous amount of potential. Its new president is going to stop exporting oil, which is a good thing, because these countries are going to eventually run out of oil. For example, a country just announced a short time ago that the country of Colombia has only less than 5 years of oil remaining, and they're selling oil, profiteering, and putting this into the pockets of the corrupt government officials there. Now, that's absolutely absurd, because that's on a crash course for economic absolute disaster, because that's a country, like all countries, that depend heavily on the use of petroleum for transportation, for energy, for everything. And so Mexico wisely stopping the export, also some other countries cutting down on the export, understanding that their resources are limited and they cannot just sell them off as fast as possible for immediate profit. So we'll see what happens in Mexico, but a ray of hope. And I did see the inauguration speech of Manuel López, and he's very interesting to see the old president sitting there as his opulent policies are thrown in the dirt in his face. That was the scene of the inauguration address of President López, new president of Mexico. So we'll see where that goes. Comet 46P Wirtanen, I was calling it Wirtman, excuse me, for it's Wirtanen, is now believed to be rotating. And I took a look at this, and it appears more that it has a companion. So this is very strange. It's spinning, and it has the same kind of corkscrew motion as Comet Hale-Bopp, which did have a companion. And if you look in Wikipedia, it claims there was no companion. If you look at the Canary Island Conference on Hale-Bopp, which I had been invited to, I was the first invitee by the European Space Agency to talk at that conference held in the Canary Islands. And then after the NASA people got involved, they slammed the door on Mr. McCanny. didn't want me speaking there, but the Hal Weaver and the boys were first in line to talk there. And all they talked about was the companion of Hale-Bopp, which they denied in the newspapers in the United States. So a lot of corruption there. Those people are just patent liars, Hal Weaver and the boys at Hawaii University, and the whole laundry list of other so-called astronomers that keep touting this baloney, dirty snowball comet model, etc. Just liars and con men. Quick announcement. Oh, by the way, just on observing Comet 46P, its closest approach to Earth will be on the 16th of December, and it'll be in the constellation Taurus. So you can look online to get a little more exact viewing information. But I talked about that a couple weeks ago, maybe last week. Yeah, it was last week, where you have to get up after midnight or 1 in the morning to be able to view it because of the moon. The moon will be bright and will be blocking your view. So anyway, the size right now of the comet, if you look through binoculars, is equivalent to the full moon. So that is big. It's just that it's not big and bright like the full moon. It's a fuzzy little kind of ball in the sky. And because of its proximity to Earth, not because it's a big comet, but it's because of its proximity, only 30 lunar distances, it is at about 7 million miles away from the Earth, which is relatively close. Okay, so anyway, if you want more on that, but the I've looked into this rotational period. They say that the rotational period of the nucleus is 8.91 hours, which, if this were something in orbit around the nucleus, first of all, the nucleus would have to be extremely massive, and this object would have to be very close. So the jury is still out on that, but it does not look like a rotating nucleus. It looks more like an object orbiting the main nucleus of Comet 46P Wirtanen. Quick mention here that NASA is now partnering with private companies for the next alleged moon landings. So clearly NASA does not have the right stuff to pull this off. They never did, and they're moving ahead, at least monetarily. They certainly gives the Disney animators and other Los Angeles animators something to do for the next number of years, as nothing really is happening. The Orion spacecraft, they're talking about another test flight, but there again, all of these are pie in the sky, many years out. No launch systems capable of handling this moon launch. Nothing that's that is capable of launching the kind of equipment necessary to go to the moon and come back. So anyway, I don't know. But private partnering with private corporations to fill in the blanks where NASA doesn't have the right stuff. Which brings up an interesting point also in the news. The NASA Apollo mission, which is nearing 50 years at the Smithsonian Institute, is being removed. Now, it would be 2019 would be the 50th anniversary of the alleged first Apollo lunar landing. And the first man, one giant step for mankind deal. Interestingly enough, they're not waiting until the 50th anniversary. They're removing the Apollo exhibit and replacing it with a We Will Go to the Moon exhibit. I don't know how to read that one. But just a quick notice here on my water filters. We have passed the date at which I would guarantee anything would be delivered by Christmas. And so, yeah, we're just talking too short a time here, too much traffic, and we're also just busy lately. But I'm going to announce a sale. And this is something that just came up. It's kind of like a once-in-a-lifetime deal. And here is what is happening. This has to do with the whole house filter. So if you have been sitting in the wings thinking about buying a whole house filter, that is the MR5 and 9, MR5 and the MR9 filters, these are for the whole house. I mean, your laundry water, your shower water. I think it's very important, and I'm amazed that more people don't buy these. But this actually came up recently that the MR5, which is the one you would typically purchase for a home system, the MR9 is a little bit more of an industrial version, although also appropriate for a house, especially if you're doing laundry and showering. Say you got two showers going at the same time, the kitchen is going, the dishwasher, and the laundry are all going at the same time. The MR9 would be a little handier. Now, the flow rate is not slowed down. It's just the level of filtration that's going on. The MR5 is listed as 5 gallons per minute, which is a pretty good flow rate, while the MR9 is rated at 9 gallons per minute, just almost double. And remember that the replacement kits, we call them kits because there's more than just filter elements in the replacement kit. There are, for example, the last stage of this filter is a UV filter that kills any bacteria and viruses, something that you don't get when you have a countertop gravity filter or even an inline filter. You don't have that final stage of ultraviolet killing everything in the water. But the MR5 and 9 have these. So you replace the bulb in there, for example. That's a part of the kit, the replacement kit. And but anyway, here's the monetary side of this. We are the MR5 and the MR9s have a plastic housing, which is fine. It works great. We've not had any problems with it at all. But we're going to, because of better quality and also made in the USA were going to a stainless steel housing for the MR5s. And so we have still some of the, we're all out of the MR5 plastic housing. And the stainless steel housings will not be in until sometime in January. So we have this period of time where we don't have MR5s to sell. So what I did, this happened because a customer ordered this, and I thought, gee, what should I do? We ran out of the MR5 housings. So I just upgraded him to an MR9. And the difference in price is around $900. No, I'm sorry. The difference in price on the webpage is around $1,500. And between the MR5 and the MR9. So what I did is I said, okay, for $600 difference, not $1,500, for $600 difference, I will ship you an MR9 system for your house and just pay $600 more. And the customer liked that, ordered it, and I thought, gee, you know, we've got the MR9s in stock, so why don't I make this offer to everybody? So here's how it will work. If you're interested in a whole house filter, and I suggest, too, that you buy a replacement maintenance kit that you'll use probably in a year or in a year and a half when you have to replace the filter elements, etc., based on the amount of water you use. These replacement filter kits last for 30 to 50,000 gallons. So you're going to have to use a lot of water before you have to replace the filter elements and the light bulb and the UV part of the filter, etc. But you want to buy that now so you have it in stock. So you're going to be set for probably 3 years before you ever have to think about buying another replacement set. This is for the whole house filter. And so I recommend that you buy, and here's the deal, for $2,750, that's the MR5 price on sale on my webpage for the MR5 and an extra replacement kit. That would be the $2,700, $2,750 is the actual price. For $600 more, I will sell you the MR9 with a replacement kit, which would normally cost you $1,500 more. So here's how it works. Just order the MR5 online with an extra set of filters. Scroll down. It's, I believe, the second option. Be $2,700, $2,750. And then I'll send you an invoice for the other $600. It'll be an email invoice through PayPal. You just pay that, and then the total will come out then to $3,350 for the total, and you'll get an MR9, which typically would be, like I say, the sale price is $1,500 more. The full price, if the sale were not on, would be nearly $2,000, and you're just getting it for $600 more. So it's a great deal. Once again, here's how it works. Go to the webpage, the JMCCSCI, go to the webpage, click on the sales page, scroll down to the whole house filters, select the MR5, the second option with a replacement filter element set, $2,750, and then when we see that order come in, we'll send you an invoice for the other $600, not $1,500, not $2,000, but $600, and that'll be a total of $3,350 for a whole house MR9 filter. And this is a deal that if you're really looking for a whole house filter, this is a deal you will never, ever see again. Believe me. It's just a quirk circumstance because we're waiting. The stainless steel housings were supposed to be in already, but they're not. As happens, that's the way production goes. Life in the big city. But the and we're out of the plastic housing MR5s. So that leaves us in a quandary. So I'm going to give you basically an MR9 filter the price of an MR5 plus $600. So, okay. If that makes sense, just once again, go to my webpage, jmccsci.com. Click on the sales secure web ordering page link. When you get there, scroll down to the whole house filters, order an MR500, that's the smaller one, with an extra set of filters, what's called the maintenance kit. That'll be $2,750. When that order comes in, we'll send you an invoice for $600, and we'll upgrade you to the MR9 with the extra set of filters for the MR9. Okay, so I hope that makes sense. Now, a little bit of discussion about old man Schiff. Now, George Bush's father was the reason Congress passed the Trading with the Enemies Act in World War II, because old man Schiff, or as they changed their name to Bush, was a representative of the European bankers, and they are in the war business. So George Bush Sr. Was, you know, he was basically born with a silver spoon in his mouth. And just to give you a flavor for where this is going, one time they were interviewing Barbara Bush, and I think it was Dan Rather. I'm not 100% sure on that. But anyway, he asked Barbara Bush, after George Bush Sr., this is George H.W., the George Sr., you know, president in 1991, he had one term after Reagan. And before Bill Clinton. But after he was done being president, I think it was Dan Rather came up to Barbara Bush, the wife, and said, well, now you guys can, you know, go shopping, you can go and do normal things like regular people, yeah, because he's done being president. And she goes, what? He's never even had a credit card. He's never even driven a car. We have, she said, when they were in college, they were driven on dates with the Secret Service in the car. That's how she went on dates with George Bush Sr. when they were in college, when they were dating. And so that just gives you an idea that he was, you know, silver spooned all the way along. He was the head of the CIA. He was vice president under Ronald Reagan when Reagan was shot early in his term. Then George Bush Sr. took over and ran the vice presidency, but he ran the White House for the Reagan, basically the balance of the Reagan administration. And remember Ronald Reagan when the Iran-Contra deal was coming down and Reagan had to say 57 times, I don't remember. And that was his defense. When the Oliver North and the Iran-Contra and the drug trading with Central America, the gun running, the international money laundering that was going on, the drug running through MENA, Arkansas, when Bill Clinton was governor down there with Hillary laundering the money through the Rose Law Firm. All of this, you know, I'll be going into a little bit more detail in all of these things. But yeah, Barbara Bush put it pretty much summarily in a few words that when she, that George Bush Sr. never drove a car. He never drove himself around. They never went grocery shopping. They never went buying socks at the store. That he didn't have a credit card. You know, he didn't, he never lived what you would call like a normal life. This guy was silver spooned into everything he did. And of course, that is all European banker stuff. He was the boy. He was the basically the, you know, moving all the way up. And his first assignment that we are aware of was the last day that Nikola Tesla was alive. George Bush Sr. was there. Now, the story that we have that came out is just an unusual situation. A reporter, Nikola Tesla, was living in a hotel room in New York. I believe it was in Manhattan, where he had been living for some time, and he had all his books stored there, his lifetime of achievements, of patents, and everything was over. And he had one invention that he had kept. And I talk about this in my, I have a whole series of paid casts dealing with Tesla and Tesla's inventions, especially the warlike, the warfare inventions of Tesla. And there's a lot of misunderstanding. The big warfare defensive invention of Tesla was not the Tesla Tower nor the Death Ray, as it's called. It was something completely different. And anyway, Tesla had kept this to himself and was about to go to England. Now, he had negotiated with Russia, the alliance powers, the Russia, England, and the United States, to purchase his defensive weapon. And this would be a weapon that would defend a borderline or a coastal border from any intruding airspace, primarily airspace, because remember, World War II was fought in the air, not on the ground. So if you were going to be attacked, say if Japan attacked the U.S. or say Germany attacked the U.S., it would come in through the air first, and then of course land troops would follow. And that's the way the entire World War II scenario was playing out. So Tesla had a defensive weapon against incoming aerial, you know, rockets, bombs, bombers, airplanes. And remember, everything was in relatively low Earth atmosphere at the time. Okay. And I described this weapon in detail in my paid casts. I don't know which episode it is, but if you have my paid casts, you know what I'm talking about. Okay, so anyway, I'm not going to describe it here. If you want to know about this, go to my paid casts, or if you don't have my paid casts, join the paid cast and purchase all of the previous episodes, and you will be able to locate that particular episode. Okay, but this is not about Tesla. This is about George Bush Sr. So the reporter was a young lady from New York, and she went in to interview Nikola Tesla. It's one of the rare interviews that he gave during his life. And so anyway, he let this young lady in, and she came in, and his room was filled with boxes and notes and his desk. And it's interesting because she describes him eating his lunch, where he meticulously weighs out his food, including the water, and eats it. And he was a very health-conscious guy. He was, at the time, 86 and a half years old, born in 1856 in Serbia, was a very good physics student, came to the United States, and for a short time worked in Edison's lab, and then went off on his own when he realized that he was that was a whole interesting part of history right there. But that, once again, it's not what this story is about. So this young lady, woman, reporter interviews Tesla and records him on literally his last day alive. And this is January 6th of 1943. So the World War II is going on. The Allied forces in Europe, the bombing, the counter-bombing Germany against England, the V-2 rockets, all of this was in full swing, Russia and the Axis powers, etc. So Nikola Tesla is trying to sell to one of the governments, U.S., Britain, or Russia, his invention of a defensive weapon. And it is not, I repeat, it is not the death ray. But anyway, so this woman interviews him, and Tesla tells her that he's leaving the next day for England, where apparently he has contracted, but he didn't trust them because he was, this I found out the hard way too, in trying to deal with the military-industrial complex. They'll take your idea and then scoot you out and won't give you a dime. That's the way they work. And Tesla had already experienced that. And so he was not about to be had again. So he kept his invention in his head, basically. Okay, so she gets done with her interview. And the next day, she comes back because she had a few follow-up questions for him for the articles that she was writing on. So she goes up to Tesla's room in the New Yorker hotel in New York City, and the room is empty, and there's a cleaning maid in there cleaning up the room, and the room is empty. Wall to wall empty. Tesla's gone. The desk is gone. All the books and papers are gone. And Tesla, the maid says, yeah, Mr. Tesla died last night. She's like, died? He was sitting here talking to me yesterday. There was nothing wrong with this guy. He was on his way to England to sell this defensive technology. And as it turns out, none other than good old George Bush Sr. was there on site. So Tesla's last day, and Tesla did die. It wasn't like they absconded with him and hid him away someplace. He literally died and, you know, had a funeral, and he was, you know, literally died that day. So the question is, did George Bush Sr. have a hand in killing Tesla? And remember, George Bush Sr. and his old man were in the war business with the European bankers. And so there's the whole story revolving around that. But that's the first recorded incident in George Bush Sr.'s life as a spook. Let's just put it that way. Okay, so then, and that would have been in 1943, when allegedly George Bush Sr. was in the Navy and the military as a pilot or something. Well, that's probably one of the biggest concocted stories. Remember when George Bush Sr. or George Bush Jr. went for a flight on the deck of one of the aircraft carriers, and he's shown walking with his helmet. And he never went to pilot school, even. He scooted out of pilot school. And the recognition that George Bush Jr. got for being a pilot was just bogus. It was made up. But anyway, I'm not going to go there, because there's some funny history going on about World War II and George Bush Sr. somehow being a pilot during this time when he was actively doing CIA spook stuff. This is, and the CIA was literally forming during this time. And remember that after World War II, they brought over the German SS, basically, as the beginning of the CIA, what is now the Central Intelligence Agency. And these were the SS, information gathering arm of Germany. And, of course, the whole time they brought over Wernher von Braun, Operation Paperclip, and the vast sea of scientists that came along with him. And I met some of these people when I was in Los Alamos. They're still there when I was there back in the 80s. And wearing those big World War II felt pants, wool pants, with the little plaid shirts from World War II and little skinny ties and the very thick Polish or German accents. Yeah, I met some of these guys. Anyway, that's another story also. But George Bush Sr. then went on and began his life as basically underground, operating for the world bankers in the United States. At that point, their name was changed from Schiff to Bush, and he became George Walker Bush, or George, I call him George Bush Sr. Okay, now, fast forward up until he's the head of the CIA. And, of course, the CIA in those years, that was the Vietnam era, when the CIA was in Cambodia and Laos, and remember the United States stated that they were not there when they were. So this guy was, you know, in the torture chambers and the good grief, you know, all of the stuff that was going on in Southeast Asia, which was one of the main drug trafficking areas also during the Vietnam War. The heroin and the cocaine and the marijuana, but mainly the very hard drugs that started to come into the United States and really degenerate the population, especially street population of the United States. So then, after getting out of the CIA, George Bush Sr., let's step back a little bit here, was in Dallas the day that John Kennedy had his head blown off, by the way. And that was never, of course, investigated, the Warren Report and all that. That was probably one of the first opportunities that the American public had to see a real miscarriage of justice, a real miscarriage of information, the disinformation that flowed out of the CIA and covering up the, for example, the Bay of Pigs. Let me go back just a little bit also of the Cuban Revolution, and a lot of people don't understand what really happened there when Fidel and Che came into Havana with the majority of the Cuban country, people living in the countryside following them in, forcing the CIA, the mafia, the mob, and mainly those two groups out of Havana. Those people got on the boats and headed across the 90-mile stretch to Miami, where they stayed, and that has been a bone of contention ever since, because the people that were operating Havana and Cuba were not Cubans. They were Europeans. They were CIA. They were mafiosos, from which were also Sicilians, which, by the way, are not Italians. And let's just go back a little bit into the workings of the Central Bank of Europe. The World War II was a Central Bank of Europe operation. And when George Bush's old man, Schiff, came into the United States, that's what he was doing. He was setting up basically the banking system in the United States that was, of course, already existent under the Federal Reserve, which went back to the Morgans and the Chases and the same banking entities that are there today. But anyway, be that as it may. Now Reagan becomes president, and guess who's vice president under Reagan? George Bush. Short time into Reagan's administration, it appears that Ronnie Reagan didn't really realize who was running the White House. And of course, Kennedy had already been assassinated. The CIA was well entrenched in the government, and what we see now, what Trump calls the swamp, was already well under formation at that time, completely controlled, where the senators were just what they called window dressing, and basically voting according to, you know, putting out policy, etc., that had nothing to do with the benefit of the American public. And the ongoing wars, you know, the Southeast Asian wars, the ongoing litany of wars that we were involved in, all banker-operated, with the CIA spearheading them through the United States, the CIA very much involved in Latin America, the murder now that we know of Jaime Robles of Ecuador, president of Ecuador, his whole family was killed. The CIA records are now open to the public. The CIA downed that airplane with Robles' family, killing him, and basically he was a populist president of Ecuador, which took Ecuador into 20 years of complete control by the fruit and sugar companies, etc. So, once again, all CIA manipulated. Brazil, and the place they couldn't get into was Cuba. Cuba resisted a blockade through this whole period of time. And of course, there was the Bay of Pigs, which was a CIA operation that Kennedy got involved in. And it was planned before Kennedy was president. And when it failed, it took a long time to get a lot of those CIA guys out of Cuba. And there's a very interesting movie about that, where the a guy actually went down and negotiated. The same guy that did the Gary Powers negotiation with Russia, with Abel, the Russian spy, and Anyway, went to Cuba to negotiate the release of the CIA dudes that were still down in Cuba being held in prison there. So anyway, and there was like 113 of them or something like that. Anyway, good old George Bush was involved in that, but that was during the Kennedy era. And Kennedy had a great dislike for the CIA. And as we now know, Kennedy's last actual action of as president when he went to Dallas was to sign two things. One, to begin printing the currency, the actual currency of the United States, with gold backing, and the other one was to eliminate the CIA. Well, as we all know, he didn't return from Dallas, at least breathing, and had his head severely, we all know what happened. He was assassinated. George Bush Sr. was in Dallas that day, although he would never admit it. And from that point on, the government was literally, it was already, it's just that John Kennedy didn't realize who was running the government. Kennedy thought he was actually president and was going to run the presidency. And, we all know what happened there. And after that, it was just a hammerlock on the presidency. When they got to Reagan, Reagan thought he was going to be president and do some things. And he found out in short order, they almost killed him. And he took a bullet to the side. But Ronnie was a pretty stout guy. He was a very good shape person and lived through it, but never really got back to being president. George Bush Sr. ran the presidency. And of course, it was during that time that the really massive amount of drug trafficking came in with the Oliver North and the Iran-Contra. And just as a little explanation, Bill Clinton, by the way, let me just have a caveat here. I found it funny that in the CNN reporting of George Bush and Bill Clinton, they made it sound like they were rivals, one from the Democratic Party, Clinton, and then Bush from the Republican Party, and they were rivals. They was Bill Clinton won the presidency, and literally it was a fixed deal where Clinton would take over the presidency, because George Bush, he really didn't want to do that. He had more worldly important things to do. And when he got done being president during his own term, he went up to Canada and joined forces with the Royal Bank of Canada to take over the water rights of the Western Hemisphere. That was his next step in his career, taking it over for the world bankers. It was at that point that they started searching out and buying land in South America above big reservoirs. Okay, so anyway, at this time, George Bush Jr. was dealing with the Clintons, and there's somewhere on my webpage, I think it's on the Pictures of the Day subpage, I have a picture of George Bush Sr., Billy Clinton, a very young Billy Clinton, with the ring on his left hand, meaning that Hillary already had hooked her wagon to him, and it was George Wallace was the third person of importance in that picture, and this was taken at Kenny Bunkport at a lobster fest, and the other person in the picture was the current wife of George Wallace, then governor of Alabama. And I have that picture on my webpage, but the point is that the Clintons and the Bushes were very close working business partnership way back then. Well, that's how Billy, if you want to read a good book, there's a book, it's called Clinton, Bush, and the CIA, called Compromised by Terry Reed. He's one of the pilots of the MENA, Arkansas drug trafficking ring. And there's a recent movie, by the way, featuring Tom Cruise playing the part of Barry Seal, who was one of the pilots. in the CIA drug trafficking operation, and it doesn't come right out and say it, but the movie is very reserved. It makes it look like Barry Seal was the guy making all the money with boxes and cars full of money, etc., when it was the CIA. Seal was just a pilot. And anyway, that's a whole story in itself. But another little caveat on that the CNN, of course, article was just complete hogwash, because the Clintons and the Bushes were in bed together decades earlier when the MENA Arkansas operation started to become too public and Bill Clinton became president, moved off to Washington. They moved the operation to Waco, Texas, and it just so happened to be the airstrip they were using to fly the CIA, the C-110s and other military planes coming in were with the cocaine loads from Central America and from South America coming through Noriega, Central America, were coming to Waco, Texas. And the Branch Davidian compound and David Koresh were right next door taking notes and photographs. And so that the destruction of the Waco compound of David Koresh had to do with the drug trafficking of which the local sheriff was part and complicit. And of course, Hillary all the time, back in the day, we called Hillary the axe lady, because when Billy got in trouble, she went out and took care of business because she knew that her role someday, she would be president. That's what her goal was. And interestingly enough, when she was running for president, George Bush Sr. and all the Bushes, including Jeb Bush, who should have possibly been her running opponent in that election, that's the way it was planned, not Trump. The Bushes, Jeb, George, and George Jr. and George Sr. all backed Hillary. And when Hillary lost, the first thing that she said, apparently, when she lost, and it became apparent that she lost, was that it was George Bush's fault, that they had not cheated enough to get her the win, and that did not anticipate Trump being able to pull off a win over the vast amount of cheating that was going on there. And of course, I did my election study showing that Hillary got about 17 million extra votes through cheating. And that was the CIA in all parts of the country making sure she got the win. And so the very first things off of her lips when she lost the election was that it was George Bush's fault. George Bush Sr., of course. So anyway, let's go back a little bit in history and we'll pick up on the presidency of George Herbert Walker Bush in around, 19... After the Reagan era, then he just ran for president and became president. And in the waning years of his 4 years term as president was the first attack on the World Trade Center. And that's where they tried to take out the pillars in the basement of the World Trade Center with strap bombs, the same type of bombs they used to take down the Oklahoma City Federal Building, and where the data was stored from all of the Waco and the Iran-Contra and all of that data was stored in that federal building. And so they destroyed it all. And Billy Clinton, by the way, just happened to be president when that one happened. But Hillary Clinton's first operation as First Lady, our lovely First Lady, was the massacre at Waco, killing those people, women and children, having them gunned down as they run out the back door. And the whole operation there was to hide the data that David Koresh was collecting on the CIA drug trafficking coming into the Waco airport. Okay, so anyway, going back to the bombing of the World Trade Center, which was a CIA hit, of course, coordinated with Israel, and now we understand, too, Saudi Arabia involved in these as a false flag, but it didn't happen. The towers didn't come down. And so when George Bush Jr. was president, one of the very first things that happened when he was president was, of course, they made sure those towers came down, including building number 7, which had nothing hit it at all. But at any rate, as a result of that and other events, and of course they had the issue with Saddam Hussein for the first Gulf War. Now, the that was taking place, but interestingly enough, during this same time, something happened in the background which never really made the mainstream media, and that was that a little object down in the constellation Taurus was discovered by the Naval Observatory, by Richard Harrington, and Robert Harrington, I'm sorry, and it turned out to be the nucleus of Hale-Bopp. And so that whole, this was discovered and it was finalized in 1991. And I have an entire downloadable e-DVD on this subject. It's called the, it's part of my books, et cetera, package. But it deals with the Hale-Bopp era and my going back and discovering that, number one, literally, Nibiru, the object that was pulling down on Uranus and Neptune, was the nucleus of Hale-Bopp. So it was a planetary-sized object. It had a companion, which was a key instrument in understanding the mass and the size of that. And then Harrington dies instantly and as a young man, basically, even though he was head of the Naval Observatory. And Tom Van Flandern, who had initiated this study in the Naval Observatory, goes mum about Planet X. And it was literally Tom Van Flandern, who was assistant to Harrington, that started that. But anyway, be that as it may, George Bush had a little problem on his hands. And that was that the nucleus of Hale-Bopp, this planetary-sized thing, with an orbiting companion, was on its way into the solar system on a near-direct collision course with Earth. And as best they could tell, they didn't have enough data to really determine if this thing would hit Earth, but it was going to come within 1,000,000 miles of Earth. And how do I know this? Well, I went back and I did my homework. So all of this is explained, but anyway, back to George Bush Sr., he had a little bit of a problem. So he brings up a man out of the CIA who was his buddy. His name was Dan Golden. And Dan Golden was then put in. This all happened about the time when Billy Clinton took over the presidency. The wand got handed over to Billy Clinton, who was a Rhodes Scholar, who had been thoroughly versed in the maneuvering of the world banking community. That's what Rhodes Scholars are. Cecil Rhodes started the Rhodes Scholars program. You find people like Rice and the whole laundry list of people in high in government, deep in corruption, are Rhodes Scholars. These are the people that have immunity. And Billy Clinton, coming out of middle of nowhere, Arkansas, becomes a Rhodes Scholar. Well, it turns out that Bill Clinton was a illegitimate son of one of the Rockefellers. And a friend of mine used to do maintenance work at a resort, a hunting lodge resort in Texas, and the Bushes and Billy Clinton as a young boy would go down to the lodge. And so anyway, they were part of the whole family way back then. But, okay, so let's go back to this issue of Hale-Bopp. So George Bush had a problem on his hands. Dan Golden comes in from to take over NASA, puts the lid on NASA, and I saw all of this happening from the outside because I knew these people at Goddard, at Los Alamos, at JPL. And all of a sudden, the secretaries were leaving. You couldn't call up. You couldn't talk to anybody. I could call up Goddard Space Flight Center and the secretary say, "Hey, Jim, how you doing? What's going on today? Who do you want to talk to?" And they'd pass me through. And after that, it was like mum's the word. And one day I called up, and I forget who I was going to talk to. one of the scientists there, and I could hear screaming in the background. It's just pandemonium. And the people screaming and running around and doors slamming. I was like, what the hell's going on? And she goes, it's Hale-Bopp. And I said, Hale-Bopp? She goes, yeah, it's big. It's really big. And this was in like 1995. So this is 4 years after the CIA, President Bush Sr., Bill Clinton, and the Naval Observatory people, some of them who are still alive anyway, 4 years after they had actually discovered this, and NASA finds out after Hale and Bopp discovered it, the two amateurs, then they put an orbital trace on this thing, and this baby is on a collision course with Earth, and at that point they realize it's big. And that's when the whole Heaven's Gate thing came down, the mass murder of these 39 people, 37 people in California. And Hal Weaver comes out from the Hawaii Observatory and said, no, Hale-Bopp is only 42 miles across. It does not have a companion. Completely lies to the newspaper. They whitewash Art Bell. I was on Art Bell's show during this era, this epic, trying to explain that, no, Hale-Bopp does have a companion, that the I had been on Chuck Schrammick's radio show in Houston, Texas many times as a guest discussing this, comets. And Courtney Brown was a regular guest on Coast to Coast AM. This is when Art Bell was hosting the show. And I was a guest on there talking about my scientific work, etc., doing annual Christmas show with Art at that time. And anyway, this is all during this absolutely insane episode of Hale-Bopp, where all of the Planet X disinformation started. Oh my goodness. And this led up through the whole Planet X, the Nancy Leader, who was a CIA plant coming out of the Skywatch organization and the Promise organization. It's a very complicated set of issues. But anyway, I'm running out of time here. I could go on and on about the Second Gulf War and the George Bush maneuvering in the background. Like I said, he was off to doing more worldly things, like making sure that the world bankers had control of the world water supply, oil manipulation in the Mideast, the downfall of Saddam Hussein, other workings of the CIA in the background, who, by the way, are the police force of the World Bank, etc. So anyway, on the eve of George Bush Sr. croaking, excuse me, don't like the man. I don't want to be irreverent, but no, I don't like that guy at all. He was not for the American public. He was a man for the world bankers, and created a lot of destruction around the world, causing tremendous hardship and agony for hundreds of millions, if not billions, of people. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.